many artists, they channel their emotion in their music. Now, there's lots of breakup-inspired songs. Are you someone that, through your feelings, by writing about, I mean, are you, do you work through those feelings?
Absolutely.
100%. Writing about those songs?
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of wearing my heart on my sleeve. I wish I was a better lyricist. I mean, I listen to guys like John Mayer. Or, they're so prolific, you know. They take, you know, hey, you hurt me and my heart hurts, and they make it sound like fucking Shakespeare, you know. So everything I pretty much write is you know, I for quite a few years I was writing in third person, because I like I had a story. I wrote a song about me running away, but I didn't want to write it about myself, so I wrote it as a third person, like it was a girl, you know, that kind of thing. But I can't, I'm not good at writing happy, peppy songs. I think that's one of the hardest things to write. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's easy to write about breakup. It's easy to write about pain and loss and fear, anxiety, solitude. I think we all have those feelings.
We do.
Whether people want to admit it or not. And I think that for me, that's always been the easiest thing. I try so hard to write. I wrote a Christmas song a couple of years ago that me and a couple of the people wrote that we submitted for some Christmas. I don't know if it ended up in a Hallmark thing or not, but it was really hard to write something that wasn't from my heart and something that wasn't an experience, you know, because we were given, you know, like in TV and film, they go, okay, this is a story. We need to kind of say this, but we kind of have to say this. And then, so you're like given this thing, okay, I got to write a song around these parameters. And then you submit it. No, we don't like that word. Can you change this word? And we don't want a religious overtone. So now I came up with this song that it's like, wow, it's really, it's cool. And it fits what they want, but in a kind of way, it didn't feel like mine because it wasn't like
your story.
It wasn't my story, but that's the thing. I was writing a story and I was really, I loved the challenge. Because I liked being out of my comfort zone, and I liked working with other writers and writing something specific that they ultimately bought. So that was kind of cool. I don't think I could be a staff writer or something like that, because I think I would pull my hair out, because I know working with TV.
Tell me what you like. Tell me something about your story.
Right. They say, this is what we want. And then they call you back and they go, yeah, no, we changed our mind. That director changed his mind. And like, fuck, I would pull my hair out. I have a few friends that are composers that do, like, you know, not big, but they do stuff for Hallmark and all that stuff. And it's a nightmare. As much as the money is sometimes good, they're like, we can only be as creative as they allow us to be, mm-hmm. as the writer or director or, you know, wants us to be. And so I think it's fun to do that. But ultimately, I love just writing, you know, I can only write kind of what comes out of me, you know. I'm not one of those guys who can really write like sort of, you know.
So what is your creative process when writing original songs? Do you have a method to the madness?
No, just, I think like a lot of people just hear something and sit at the piano or the guitar. It's pretty, lately it's been more the piano because I like I think I've been playing guitar so long that sometimes, I don't know, you probably feel that way. Sometimes you pick it up and like, God, I'm playing the same damn 7 chords, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's something about stretching your hands on the keys and the bass notes. And, you know, I'm not a good piano player at all, but I find that I can write on piano well. And yeah, just little bits. I mean, I've got, you know, 60 or 70 bits on my phone and you go back and revisit. And, you know, time is the hardest thing when you're a dad and you're busy, you know. It's like, what do you find time to be creative? Sometimes at 2 a.m. when everybody's sleeping, you know.
That's when I find my most creative outlets.
Yeah.
Everybody, when it's quiet in the house, and, you know, because you have 3 kids.
Yeah.
3 kids. And, you know, their busy day consumes most of our day. In fact, this is the very first time in my, you know, since I've been really pretty much married to Kristen, other than the very first year we were together, that the kids are all at school now. So we're like, what do we do? Hey, you want to have a romantic moment? I mean,
it's like, that's what happens, man. When your kids start to go to school, you're like, hey, there you are.
Yeah. Well, we're not being interrupted by mom, dad, all day long, exactly. You know?
Well, I mean, and as far as the creative process goes, whether, you know, you're writing a song or writing a script or writing a whatever, you know, my wife says to me sometimes, well, you know, you got a couple hours, Julian's doing this. Can you, I go, I don't work like that creatively. I don't go, oh, cool, I have a 2-hour block. Let me be creative. I know that sounds lame. And it's like, I'm not waiting for inspiration from the moon, but I just don't work that way. I have to be in a place where I'm kind of like, okay, I'm not thinking about, do I have to take Julian into temple? Do I have to, you know, like it's, you know, it is as you get older and you have a family, it definitely is harder. And I've heard that from many, many of my friends who tour and are just busier. It's harder. So my ultimate goal, really, my focus is to just write more original music, not necessarily for me, but for other people. I'm not looking at big dollar making. I know I'm not going to, you know, become a rock star. I'm too old to be a rock star and it's not going to happen. I just want to stay in this business and be relevant is for myself, you know, like I'm still writing songs. I can still produce music. I still like to arrange music. Like I just want to be creative and feel good about what I'm doing. And fortunately, because I have a lot of different avenues and different bands, my acoustic and the band and my tribute band, it allows me to, like, I'm just one of those guys that I have to have a petri dish of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Because if I did one thing, I would shoot myself.
Yeah.
I would fucking shoot myself.
Same with me. What's the best piece of advice another musician ever gave you?
Bret Michaels gave me the best piece of advice. I think we were celebrating his 40th birthday. So it was quite a few years ago. I worked with him on a solo record. And he said to me, we were talking about Poison and, you know, how when they came on the scene in LA, they were the same, but different than everybody. And what they did to get a deal and what they did, how they kind of walked with blinders on, you know, and just like, you stay so focused, you don't hear the naysayers, you don't hear anything. And he said to me, he goes, you know what happened did for us? He goes, we just didn't give up. He goes, and I'll never forget this. And maybe it's a line that a million people have said, but, and it's not like Brett's some prolific, you know, historian, but he said to me, he goes, if you stay in line long enough, you make it to the front.
Hey, great advice.
I mean, it's stupid. It's simple. It's so primitive sounding.
Yeah, but people are going to drop out. It's like what you were talking
about. That's what I said at the beginning.
Yeah. People go, you know, they run away with their tails between their leg because, oh, wow, I didn't make it in 6 months. I didn't make it in a year. I didn't make it in 3 years.
Right.
Well, maybe you didn't stay in line long enough.
Right. Or make it, what does that mean? You know, what does making it mean? And how long? That's why I don't like to rest on my laurels because what I did, I'm only as good as my last gig. You know, I look at every gig I do, as silly as it sounds, like this could be my last time I sing a song. This could be the last time I play. I literally look at it that way because I could get hit by a car tomorrow. Anything could happen tomorrow. And when he told me that, I was like, wow, I go, that just makes such sense because it's about endurance. I mean, look at Adam Sandler, right? One of the richest guys in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Who thought when he was doing this goofy shit on Saturday Night Live and all the, you know, all the stupid shit he was doing, that he would become this mogul?
One of the most successful producers in Hollywood. I mean, there's a lot of successful Saturday Night Live personalities that have been on there, but not as successful as he is.
No. One might say, well, he's made it on stupid movies. Whatever.
I mean, that was smart.
Legacy. Yeah. To me, he created a legacy. Like you look back and go, why are we still listening to Cat Stevens' Wild World? Because it's timeless. Why are people going to watch The Waterboy in 30 years? Because it's always going to be hilarious. And that to me, that whole just lasting in the business and staying like that's, it's all about that. I mean, really, that's what it's about more than anything, more than talent, more than luck and timing is just never. One of the things that I do that I don't give a lot of advice to musicians. But one of the things I tell young musicians and I tell them, I said, be fucking relentless. I said, I hammered people for gigs. I had an agent that I started working with about 13 years ago. Who was put me in the pole lounge, put me in all these movie stars' homes and everything. And I hammered him for a year. I knew his book, I email, and this was a while ago. So at one point I had the address to his office. I'm like, I can take and drop my shit off because he's not calling me back. I drove to North Bronson and Beverly Hills. I'm like, where the hell is this address? I'm not seeing this address. Of course it wasn't a real address. It was a P.O. box, right? So I was like, God, and I finally, after 13 months of hammering him, I was like, give me a chance. He called me and said, hey, I got a party for Ford. Ford Motor Company. It's a 50-person dinner. It's at this house in Beverly Hills, the Entourage House. He goes, my guy said, I'm going to throw this at you, but you got to do really well. And I was terrified because I hadn't done a gig like this. And it was super high-end event planners. And it was just this crazy. And I went and I killed it. And then he never stopped calling me. But I hammered him. And I always tell people, I go, be prepared for two things when you're trying to find a gig. I go, either take yes for an answer or be okay with no, but whatever it is, just keep moving forward. Like, don't be the guy who, well, I called him 2 times. He never called me back. Well, like, what do you think? You're the priority on his list. This guy's an event planner. This guy's a manager. He's got 50 people he's got to worry about. You think he's going to worry about your email and can you give me a gig? That's not how it is. You have to be, you have to be that way.
Yeah.
And I found that people try to give me credit for stuff. I go, it's not that I'm a great musician. I go, I'm just a hustler. I'm a fucking hustler. Yeah. I'm a hustler and I can take no for an answer, but I'm going to get an answer out of you one way or another. And that, my tenacity is probably what's kept me in this business longer than anything.
Yeah. And your hair.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still have it.
You got some of the best hair in the business.
Dealing with that. Then there's that whole angle of it. I don't need to tell you, you're a pretty boy. You probably heard it your whole life. People judge you based on the way you look,
Sure, immediately. That's just how
people a lot of that comes with what's the first thing off the tier? It's like, well, obviously he's gotten it from where his looks, or he can't be that good, or he can't be,
smart or know what he's doing.
You have to fight that. And that's another battle. People think that I've gotten shit easy or I've gotten late in this business, or gotten all these things. But I'm like, look, man, I'm an average looking guy. Maybe you think I'm not, but I've learned to not use it, but whatever it is that I have, whatever appeal that is I have and whatever way it works, I've learned to figure out what that is and use that as a strength and help me in this business. So whether it's still having my hair or having long, whatever it is, it's just angles, If you're a good looking person and you know that people listen a little bit more because you've got a little swagger on you or you speak, then that's how you work it. That's how you work it in this business. You work all the things that you can in this business. So I'm fortunate that I'm not aging super fast and I'm not looking too decrepit and wrinkles aren't setting in too bad. And I'm grateful for that because, one of the things I learned, interestingly enough, about acting from my ex-wife, who was, unsuccessfully not a, working and never made it. But I always thought it was about how good looking you are. And I remember her trying to get work in commercials and she could never get a job in commercials. And all her friends with quirky faces and quirky voices and quirky personalities were working like mad. Crazy, And she would tell me, she goes, I can't get these soap ads or these things in the middle of the day because the moms that are sitting home don't want to see some beautiful blonde, with no zits on her face. That's not what they want to see. They want to see an average girl during the day in between their soaps and between the talk shows. And I realized that that's kind of like how it is in the music business. You can be bizarre looking and anything. You just have to have that X factor, something that people go, oh yeah, yeah. I can sell that. I can market that, Yeah. And then learning how to, how long do you keep it? How long do you get lucky enough to stay and like ride that wave,
I know you recently were playing a gig where you're playing all your original music. Do you have some new music that you're working on? People can check
out
any platform.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. I mean, I've been starting to collaborate with some other people. I have a friend of mine that we're working with a producer in Canada who does a lot of film and TV stuff. And they approached me about tweaking some stuff on some vocals, and then I did it in one song and they really liked it, and then they threw me an idea, and I've done most of my writing by myself. I've had a few co-writers, and a lot of that is just because I think when you're a writer in any capacity, there's, you're pouring out from your heart, you kind of sometimes you don't want people to go, oh, I don't like that, I don't like that, so you do. But I'm really enjoying collaborating with these guys, and the whole idea of being all of us in three different cities and still being able to make music just by sending files back and forth is really cool. And I'm working with a guy who's coming from a completely different place musically. So when he throws me an idea, I didn't think of, I'm like, oh wow, that's really cool. And you throw it back and forth. And so I'm kind of just working on different stuff. I don't particularly have like one thing. I've got some originals. I'm co-writing with a couple of people. I'm trying to produce. I found the last 4 years, I ended up producing 4 different female artists, like individual songs. For some reason, I've gravitated, or they've gravitated towards me. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy doing that. You know, I just love taking people's songs and taking all those years of stuff that I've seen and heard, and, you know, just putting my input in, not right or wrong, just, you know, like with you, you write people and they like your ideas, and you continually create a flow. And just all. Always working on new music with people, man. Trying to release it in, you know, independently. Now just release it independently. Or I have a bunch of songs that I submit to a publishing company for placement, you know, because that's really where it's at. Mailbox money is where it's at. You know that, you know.
Yeah. If you can get a song,
you can start getting those checks, you know, in the mail without asking for them. And that's where music, that's really where the money is in music these days, is music placement. Because you know, the you get paid in perpetuity for that stuff. And if you get something that's, you know, worldwide or in syndication, anything, you know, anything like that is great. So I'm more of an open canvas and now, and more open-minded about writing and music and everything. You know, I got a country song that I'm finishing with another friend, and nice. I love it all, man. So for me, the variety of being able to play guitar or sing, and I love to sing on people's stuff. I love to play on people's stuff. Like anything that involves me being creative, I love. You know, so I just want to keep that going. And that's part of that is just staying relevant and being open to working with new people and doing different things.
Well, you're definitely an incredible talent. If you could take a ride in the Jacob Young time machine, everybody on the show does, what advice would you give that 16-year-old Mark?
Oh, man. I would probably... I'd probably take music lessons. Like I taught myself how to play guitar. I studied sax formally with private teachers for years, but then I stopped it. And then I pretty much just taught myself how to play. And I would go back and really focus on the music theory, because so many of the people that I work with and so many things that I want to do involve some of that real knowledge, you know, to be able to walk into a session and sight read something. I can't do that. I can bullshit my way through it. I might be able to read some of it. I've got a great ear, but there's times now that I'm older, and it's funny because I dropped out of high school, right? I'd never go back to high school. I would never redo that, but I would go back and I'd go to Berkeley or I'd go to MI. It's something just for the foundational knowledge, you know, right? Because like I play sax when I play tenor saxophone. And I started studying that again a couple of years ago. And, you know, that instrument is in a different key than everything else is. Like, so if we're playing country song, I'd say this is in G, everything's a step off. Mm-hmm. And so that's where music theory comes in. Like, you know, go, okay, we're playing this in C sharp and I got to go. So that's probably the only thing I would do differently, was just take my music, my ability to know music theory better, so that I could do more right now, because I know it would afford me a lot. I could go into a session, you know, I could call somebody up and go, you need me to sight read something? I'm your guy. Right. I'm not that guy. I don't want to be that guy, but I wish I had the tools. I wish I had prepared the tools a little bit more. That's about the only thing I changed. I mean, you know, the rest is what made me who I am as a person, but musically,
musically who you are.
Yeah. But as far as if I had that extra knowledge, you know, that extra foundation to be able to go, oh yeah, I can, you know, I can sight read this and transpose it into any key you want in 5 minutes. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I like being an artist who just, a musician who just plays from the heart, but it would be nice to have that, you know, I would go back and do that.
Yeah.
Ultimately. I mean,
so the other question I have is my sponsor Boys Town, their motto is "He ain't heavy. He's my brother." I mean, in some point in our lives, we've had to depend on somebody and carry us. Who's carried you?
Nobody really. I mean,
well, you've definitely carried yourself then.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been on my own most of my life, and you know, I've gone through a couple of horrible divorces, and you know, when you're fortunately for you, you have a wonderful marriage, and you know, I'm sure it's not perfect like any marriage, but when you know, you have when you have a partner and you build a life, there's consistency and there's continuity, like you're putting building blocks on, right? When you're married and you get divorced, all the fucking blocks go down and you start all over again. Mm-hmm. And then you build it again. And then all the fucking blocks cleared again. So twice in my life, I mean, I'm remarried now for, you know, you met my wife. I'm married, you know, for a third time. So those blocks have been building again for like the last 11 years. And she's been the rock that I've had in my life, you know, for the last 11 years. So she would probably be the only thing. But aside from that, I've had to clear the board on friends twice, you know, and start over financially, emotionally, everything. So that kind of stuff, you know, I don't think anybody can carry you unless you're, you know, maybe an addict or you hit rock bottom and you're home, you know, that kind of thing. But I never really got there. I hit some pretty rough blows, but all in all, I've always been a self-motivator. I always pick myself up, even if I'm down, you know, we've talked before in text, you know, shit's rough and shit's not going the way you want. But, you know, for me, having my kids, I mean, that's what makes me get up in the morning. Cause if you don't have your kids, we don't know what it's like not to have our kids, but when you want to give up and you want to just fucking throw in the towel, you're like, I can't, these people are depending on me.
Right.
And I'm the example. It's like, what kind of example do you want to give your kid? You're a quitter, that you just give in, that you don't. So that sense of higher responsibility that's the thing that keeps me going.
I mean, you know, I feel that same way with my kids too, because I've been through a lot of the, you know, similar things that you've gone through. I've been in foster care. I've, you know, I had a really rough last few years in my high school and that was tough, but. And so I have a lot of those, the same feeling about, you know, who's carried me in my life. But when I look at my children and I look them in the eyes, even though they could be very small or young, tall and young, many times I find that their heart, their moments with me is what carries those things in my life.
Yeah. Because you can't make those things up.
No.
You know, and it's funny because, you know, we've known each other, like 5-6 years now. And I see your kids growing and, you know, you start to see, you know, your kids are really a snapshot of you, you know, like whenever you see, like I always say, do you see a kid who's an asshole in a store? The chances dad's an asshole or his mom's an asshole, you know, like dogs, like aggressive dogs. If you had a nice owner, your dog's not an aggressive dog. You know, I see your son in you and your face, and I see your kids, and you start to see that they become the mini snapshot of you, you know? So the responsibility is so massive because you're the footprint, you know, do they follow or don't follow? And like you said, so sometimes those are the things that, you know, I mean, that's what matters at the end of the day and end of your life. That's what matters is your family. So that's always been what's kept me going, because plenty of times I wanted to give up and in this business and just throw in the towel or just, you know, take the easy way out and just, you know, get a job and not follow my passion. And that's a tough thing too, you know, doing what we do. You want your kids to have some semblance of foundation in their life, and our business has zero consistency and zero reliability, especially now, especially at our age. Mm-hmm. So, but if they're drawn to that and they want to do that, how do you stop them?
Yeah. Who are we to say no?
Yeah. Because it didn't work out for me. Because like, I tell people ask me about my kids, you doing any music? I'm like, yeah, I'd love them to play music, but I'm not going to encourage them to go into the business because it's brutal. Right. But if that's where their head is at and they're like, dad, this is what I got, then so be it. But it's, you know, I sometimes wonder if, you know, my youngest son, like, you know, the weirdness of my life, my schedule, the, you know, and then they, you know, then they hang out with their friends and, oh, my friend's dad's a lawyer and he's a doctor and he's, you know, what's your dad do? Oh, he's a musician. Oh, really? Yeah. It's like, you know, well, what is what? And, but then, you know, you ask those guys, I'm like, man, I kill it.
I wish I could be a musician, man. I would just love to play. I've just been playing the guitar in my office every day, you know?
Yeah. Oh, dude, if I could get on stage like you just one time, it must be so awesome to be on, you know, which is vicariously living through other people, you know? Yeah. And, but you know, it's tough when you're trying to, you know, be a role model and you have a crazy business like this that you, that you're trying to survive in and make a living.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, be in it, but bring home money. Not just, hey, I'm working on 15 great projects. I don't have any money, but I'm, you know, it's like, but that's the passion of the art. You know, you don't, if you, what's that saying? That's like, if you're, you know, if you're doing it for the money, you're in the wrong business, you know? Cause there's, you can't get into this business. I'm doing it for the money. Cause there's no money in this business. There's just really high highs and luck and timing.
Yeah.
You know,
and we feel the, and we feel that ebb and flow with, you know, the artistic statements in between, however we can, or, and, you know,
yeah, sometimes they don't mean anything monetarily, but like you're talking about the projects you're doing, when your heart is in something and you feel so good about something and that's all the validation you need, you know, to inspire you for the next thing. Yeah. Sometimes it's just to inspire you for the next thing. Like I finish a great song and it inspires me to do it better the next time.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I mean, we've known each other for such a long time and it's so cool to learn new things about you and my friends, of course, that I never knew before through this podcast.
Yeah, man. I love it.
And everyone should check out marcustrion.com to follow you on social media and learn where they can hear your music, see you live. Keep on playing, brother. Keep on doing it because I hope to see you on stage soon when I'm back in Los Angeles.
Yeah, man. We'll make some music together again one of these days. We didn't even talk about our little musical adventure together.
Exactly. Well, that's about all the time we have for today. Real Conversations with Jacob Young is sponsored by Boys Town. Boys Town, their slogan is, he ain't heavy, he's my brother. For over 100 years, Boys Town's been saving children, healing families, and they're only one call away. They're always there to help. Please go to boystown.org for all the details on how to access Boys Town's health services, or just simply go to yourlifeyourvoice.org. And if you're in need of immediate crisis, you need some help, please just call the trained counselors at Boys Town National Hotline at 800-448-3000, 800-448-3000. Don't feel like calling, text VOICE, V-O-I-C-E, to 20121. Thanks for joining me on Real Conversations. I'm Jacob Young. Until next time, love yourself and love each other.